If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. You watched today's guest grow up in front of your eyes on Baywatch, so you probably think you know him, but Jeremy Jackson is not that kid anymore. He opens up about growing up in Hollywood, his addiction issues, a couple of infamous reality show stints, his spirituality, and how everything brought him to where he is now, helping others. It's such an interesting and powerful interview that I had with Jeremy. We have so many mutual friends, and it was such an honor to be able to sit down with him and connect in the way that I did. I think you guys are going to be fascinated by who he's become and what he's been through, and he really breaks down some interesting stories and talks all about what it was like to work with David Hasselhoff and Pamela Anderson, and he named drops a ton. Wait till you find out who he was up against, who almost got the part of Hobie on Baywatch instead of him. You're going to be floored. So sit back, get a drink, relax, and listen to our interview with Jeremy Jackson. Hey, Jeremy, I'm so excited you're here. Thank you for joining Misunderstood.
Aloha. Good to see you.
So you are vacationing in Hawaii. How is it over there?
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really unfortunate. My original plan was to go to Maui, an island that I know well, but of course there's the fires over there. So we had really wanted to just keep going and volunteer, get our hands dirty, boots on the ground. But the state enrolled locals included friends of mine that live on the islands that, dude, just don't come. They want everybody gone. You know, power is down, phones are down. There's really no way to help other than donating, water, backpacks, toothbrushes, stuff like that, the necessities. So we had to divert some stuff, but now I'm in Kauai with a dear friend of mine, actually, Eric Neese, who I want to get you in touch with for your show. He'd be fantastic. Awesome. I got some friends out here that are doing a ayahuasca ceremony with him on some sacred ground.
Wow. Are you going to do that?
No, I've participated in them at the meditation level, just doing breath work.
Okay.
They're beautiful ceremonies. It's powerful medicine. It's so powerful medicine that you can tap in and have an experience. I left my body for 4.5 hours with no ayahuasca in crossed my lips. All I did is lay down on the ground and breathe, and it pulled me into the vortex. It can be amazing stuff, especially when done with somebody who really channels that energy, who has a relationship with it, a real shaman, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so interested in that whole topic.
How about you? Have you ever done it?
I have not, because I'm scared of throwing up. And so it's like a legit, like I'm petrified of it. When I was 4 years old, I ate poison berries. My mother gave me Ipecac. Mm-hmm. I, to this day, have never thrown up again, knock on wood.
Yeah.
And it's like a fear of mine, but I know that they say that means you're like purging some stuff in you, and it would probably be good for me.
You know, so attachment is the root of all human suffering. And you're attached to this idea of vomiting. Your trauma is officially your God. And it's like Jesus parts the clouds and comes down and reaches his hands and says, "Rachel, come with me." You're like, "But I'm gonna puke. I'm going to hold on to this puke instead of having this spiritual breakthrough." Mm-hmm. I want you to put one in one hand and one in the other and tell you which one carries more weight to everybody else, right? Like, "Oh my gosh, no, I want the spiritual breakthrough. I want to be happy, joyous, and free." Nobody would choose to hold on to not vomiting if it takes vomiting, right? And this is why the Bible says it's easier to fit a camel through the needle's eye than a rich man to get into heaven, because a rich man represents he who has much possessions, he who is carrying load with him that cannot go through that small hole. So I love this example of taking something so small as I don't want to vomit, and looking at what it could be potentially costing you.
I totally agree. You almost just made me tear up, because it's that's such a good way to put it. I've never thought of it that way. You know what I mean? And it has prevented me from doing all sorts of things my whole life, to be honest with you. So enjoying roller coasters, eating certain foods, going on trips. I mean, it's so dumb, you know?
But maybe it's been beneficial too. Yeah, over drinking.
That's right. Like I do that. Not. Yeah, I don't get drunk because of it. I don't drink a lot. Yeah, it's very true. But but ayahuasca is something I've been super interested in. I want to do an episode on it because I think people are fascinated by it.
Well, I got your guy. I got your guy. Good. He spent 2 years with the Shipibo Indians in Peru. He has been indoctrinated as an official, you know, tribesman. He's done over 300. Ceremonies on himself. He leads people. I mean, he moved to Kauai. He walks barefoot and he's just communes with nature and speaks truth and heals people. It's wonderful. Yeah.
I love that. So I have a question.
He's been doing it for 15 years.
Wow.
So you got good.
I cannot wait. So do you not choose to drink the medicine or whatever they call it because of where you are in your life with not doing drugs and not drinking?
Yeah. So, you know, I made a clear decision to really participate in this unenhanced, unaided. I mean, look, mushrooms, microdosing, macrodosing, you know, LSD, microdosing, macrodosing, DMT, microdosing, macrodosing, ayahuasca, amazing, beautiful things. No doubt holds breakthrough, realizations, enhanced cognition, no doubt. And I've done it, you know, I've done those things, minus ayahuasca and ibogaine. I've done a lot of those hallucinogens and had powerful experiences, but my most recent download, which was about 3 years ago, you know, I've had bouts of sobriety that were 12 years, 3 years, a couple times. So I really spent most of the last 22 years of my life, I've been legitimately 100% medication free, clean, and sober for about 18 of them.
Wow.
The last message I got was really clear. And it was like, there's parts of you that, you know, cannot be helped with exterior solutions. There is an inside journey that must happen raw. It must happen through emotional and spiritual, unaided, unabetted, unassisted, medically or medicinally.
Yeah.
So I've just been following that intuition, that download, and really seeking to heal in various other ways through meditation, through self-reflection, through studying various religions, through prayer, through meditation, through working with others.
Wow.
So in a roundabout way to answer your question, yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Okay. So I think obviously most people know your name because of Baywatch and because of Hobie on Baywatch. Uh-huh. And you were part mm-hmm. of this iconic sort of one of a kind at the time, you know, the biggest show in television with a ton of stars. Right. So before we talk about it, I just want to know like how you got there, how you got to the place where you were offered that spot on the show.
So, you know, I got 120 something stitches in my forehead when I was a year old. So 1 year old, I was practicing my Michael Jackson dance moves. While I was still in diapers, I was obsessively, compulsively committed to my craft. I was going to sing. I was going to dance. It was in my blood. It was in my bones. I did ballet. I started ballet at three. You know, I'm classically trained in dance and you know, it was just my life. I didn't know it was a job. I didn't know, but I knew I wanted to perform and I wanted to infuse and transmute energy from crowds. So anywhere I could get a spot on a table, I was dancing. I didn't know how to tap dance. I'm pretending, you know, I'm watching Shirley Temple and stuff. I'm like, this is it. This is what I'm meant to do. So, you know, really I'm not who I am because I was on Baywatch. You know, I got Baywatch because of who I was innately, you know, on a cellular, visceral level. It's just who I was and what I had to do. I discovered that outlet early and I wouldn't stop. It was my, it's what I ate, slept and breathed and boom, you know, I get in front of an agent and they're like, well, you got to get this kid and stuff. And I had a poor single mom. We didn't know anything about the entertainment industry. She didn't know. We were in Orange County. It's an hour or more away from LA. And it was just kind of a random number on a bulletin board. Child actors wanted. My mom's like, well, geez, he's such a ham, you know? And this was at 5 years old. Mm. So you just kind of put a shot in the dark up there. And then it was just a roller coaster ride of commercials and movies and boom, 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 boom. It just flooded in.
Wow. Okay. So what was that like going to set the first day on Baywatch or actually your first that you ever were on? I mean, did you get nervous? Like, tell me about what that was like.
So the first set I really was ever on was a Mattel Color Racers, the little cars that change color.
Okay.
And
well, I remember those. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was so prepared. I mean, I loved Hot Wheels. I was obsessed with Hot Wheels already. I'm 6 years old. You know, I've gone on maybe 10 or 15 auditions mm-hmm. already. And here's my first one. So for 10 or 15 auditions, I've been telling myself, I'm going to get this. I'm going to get this. I'm going to get this. This is the one I'm going to get this. And, you know, took a little bit of failure and boom, I get it. So I was so prepared, so dedicated, so astute, so, you know, pragmatic, shaking hands, looking, you know, grown men in the eyes that they hired me for six more commercials. I mean, they were like, you're the Mattel kid. Congratulations. Wow. You're the easiest kid to work with we've ever had. And I don't know how I knew to do that or it's just, you know, it just happened.
It just
and
came naturally.
It was cool. It was so cool, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine for a six-year-old kid who's obsessed with Hot Wheels and then like getting Hot Wheels and free Hot Wheels and being at the Mattel factory, you
right,
know? It was
right.
the neatest thing ever.
Right. That must have been the coolest thing ever. All right. So when you found out you were getting Baywatch, was this, did you know what a hit this would be? Did you know who you were going to be acting with and the level of, you know, celebrity that you all were going to have one day?
Well, you know, I learned pretty early on, you want to think positively, but you don't want to get your heart set on stuff because it's painful to let down. So if you don't get it right. However, I had been watching Knight Rider in my car seat. I mean, I would get in my car seat and sit in it in front of the TV, you know, before we'd go on rides and stuff. I had a Knight Rider big wheel.
Oh my God.
So I was already playing Knight Rider as a kid. I was like, I mean, it was Elvis Presley, it was Michael Jackson, and it was David Hasselhoff. I mean, if you could blend the three coolest people in the world together for me, it was that combo. And of course, Rambo came in a little bit later. So you got like Stallone, a little Stallone, and David, a little David Hasselhoff, a little MJ, and a little Elvis.
Yeah.
Those were my idols. And so to be, I grew up at the beach. I already boogie boarded all the time. I was tan. I literally had sand in my shoes. I had sun streaks in my hair. And then you go to LA, you know, you got these Burbank kids who are shuttled in from God knows where with their perfect outfits and their stage moms. And they're like all drama trained. And I'm like coming in like this surf kid already with the single mom. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like a match made in heaven for me, but I had no idea it was going to be a smash hit. Of course you want it to be, but you know, it was a really, really, really big deal for me, man. It was, it was 6 auditions, by the way. It was a lot of, oh my gosh, yes, they like me. Oh my gosh, I'm closer. Like Leonardo DiCaprio and I were some of the last picks.
No way. Oh
my goodness. If not the 2 last picks. You know, I believe Will Horniff, who he was in the TV show Lassie. I believe just after Baywatch, and Leonardo DiCaprio and I.
I know Andrew Keegan. Time out. You beat out Leonardo DiCaprio for the spot.
I did. I bet he's kicking himself now, isn't he? Poor guy.
Poor guy. Yeah. What a horrible downhill career. Yeah. Oh my God. Wow. So that must have felt good when you finally got it.
It was amazing. Uh-huh. And of course I just got to hang out on the beach all day and do what I love to do, and hang out with Knight Rider. Was, as far as I was concerned, he was going to be my real dad, and I was going to convince him and my mom to get married. And you know,
how did that go?
It didn't.
Right. All right. But what was your relationship with a lot of these actors? Did you get close to them? Were they distant because of the age?
So, I honestly caused kind of a lot of, on the set.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yes, there was a big age difference, of course. Mm-hmm. And you know, my character's, notoriety was really kind of building. And in the early days of Baywatch, for the real Baywatch fans out there, if you notice, you know, the first 3 or 4 seasons were really kind of family driven. There was a lot of my character getting in trouble. You know, there was almost kind of a Mayberry, you know, Andy Taylor. What's that? What was that show with Opie and Andy? Oh. You know, there was always like,
yeah,
you know what I'm talking about, right?
Andy Griffith Show.
The Andy Griffith Show. It's like dad's not a cop. Dad's a lifeguard. And dad goes out to do his job, and son's going to school and getting a little mayhem. And then dad comes home to teach son a lesson. There was kind of a lot of that in the show, which was amazing. So my character got to have cool girlfriends, and they'd bring kids in to do stuff with me, skateboarding in Venice Beach with other kid actors. But as far as the adults, you know, Pam was, gosh, in her early 20s when she came on the show. She was a big sweetheart. Most everybody took, you know, very kindly and loving and supportive to me. I became friends with everybody. We came somewhat of a dysfunctional family pretty early on. David was, of course, Knight Rider, you know, a millionaire icon that's like, you know, probably annoyed with working with this hyperactive kid that wants him to be his dad all the time. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting dynamic.
But was he kind to you? Did he take you under his wing? Did he teach you how to act at all?
Oh yeah. I mean, just watching the guy, and yes, he did take me aside and teach me a lot of life lessons. He was a powerful demonstration of what it looks like to, you know, be kind of a god. You know, which kind of set me up for failure, I would say later on, because holding that standard of existence is pretty high level, pretty high functioning, and kind of the higher you are, the further you have to fall, essentially. So there was that dichotomy of, yes, he was loving and supportive. He told me things like, you know, no one's ever going to believe in you as much as you believe in yourself. So he was on the phone with his agents and his managers fighting for himself, and kind of taught me how to really fight for yourself. And he was always very loving and very kind to his fans, and took time out. He taught me how to do that, make it about your supporters. And, you know, but also a busy guy with a busy schedule and everybody out on his coattails. So being the kid who just wanted quality time, was a little sad at times, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned, Pamela Anderson. What was it like to work with her? Did you, you know, get to experience sort of what she's come out talking about now, which is that she wanted to be a serious actor. They didn't really take her that seriously or would give her, a lot of her speaking parts were taken out because of the way she looked, essentially. Did you see
I haven't seen any of that. I really haven't. And gosh, you know, what would I say about that? I would say that when Pamela came on the show, I think is when the producers really started tasting blood. It's like she was so hot that the ratings did amazing things, and the fanatics, you know, we went from having a following to having fanatics, you know, people that would fly across the country just to get a look at her across the yellow tape line. You know, David was already that type of star, but she added something extra. And I think it's when the producers really became like sharks and they began their quest of finding the next Pam. It's just pack the show with these lightning in a bottle, breathtaking beauties, and give the people what they want. They want to see this fantasy of the most incredible people. And I love him, sweetheart. I mean, just like such a gentle and kind and delicate, wonderful person, considerate. However, she was a terrible actress. I mean, I at the same time, I don't blame them for not giving her more stuff. You know, it was almost uncomfortable to watch sometimes.
Wow.
Okay. I don't know if I would have done much different.
Right. And did you
as much as I love her?
Yeah, no, I get it. And did you ever see
Look at Jason Momoa. Watch Baywatch Hawaii. Literally watch Baywatch Hawaii. Jason Momoa, terrible actor. Like, oh my gosh, like, ugh. And now he's incredible. So had they given her the opportunity to grow and support her craft and had her with private coaches, you know, could that have been different? Possibly.
Right. So you never saw the documentary that came out or the made for TV movie about the sex tape. Did you ever follow that?
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, like that. I was going to say you were there and I like that you know her how you know her. You don't have to watch all that.
Right.
All that stuff. So eventually you go on and decide that you want to leave Baywatch. That was your decision, not theirs. Will you tell me a little bit about what happened there?
Yeah. So, you know, I was 18 years old, and at 17, I had met a beautiful extra who was an Idaho import, a ballerina who was gorgeous, and we fell in love. And, you know, I started partying really hard with her. I mean, I had been drinking and doing blow and going to mansion parties and hanging out at the Playboy Mansion and stuff. I mean, 16 years old, I was doing that. 14 years old, I was doing that. But really turned a corner when I met her. She was already addicted to crystal meth. Do you know Bobby Brown?
Yes.
The model, Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
You guys are probably friends, right? Yeah. So Bobby Brown was taking diet pills back then. You know, no secret. I'm not blowing her anonymity. She'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. And she shared them with, you know, my girl. So my girl, unbeknownst to me, was addicted to crystal meth. I run out of coke, you know, the gentleman's drug. This is a distinguished drug. This is what you do when you're cool and have money. And I do this trailer trash, you know, stuff, because I don't have any more blow and we're like in a strange city. And so I became addicted to that with her and finally, and that drug just really ripped through me. I mean, it just got a hold of me. I'm naturally hyperactive, attention deficit disorder, you know, neurodivergent, you know, slightly autistic even, you want to, whatever. I got stuff going on. I got a busy brain and that stuff just boom, just put me in laser focus, man. And so I had this money and these people wanted me and needed me. And, you know, I'm kind of a extremist athlete mentality. Like I loved that I didn't have to sleep. I loved that I could get my to-do list done. And, you know, but one day I was up, I hadn't slept in 5 days and I really needed sleep and I had to work the next day. And I was so anxiety ridden. I was like, holy shit, you know, like I can't retain any water. I haven't eaten. I'm pale. I got to go to work. And, you know, I showed up, I didn't get high. And, you know, I joke around, I probably would have been better if I would have just stayed high and got through the day, but I was too weirded out to like be doing crystal meth in my trailer. You know, years of being on this show and having this routine and knowing how to hit my mark and show up and perform. They called me One Take Jeremy. That was my nickname. They loved me because we would just get it done and we could move through the day. And, you know, here I am. I've lost like a proper phonic pronunciation of words. My tongue's all lazy in my mouth. My brain's going faster than my body even will. And it was so embarrassing. I was mortified, you know? And so, you know, in that moment, due to resentments, due to feeling underpaid, due to the pressure of growing up, puberty. I mean, I was in that funky phase where I hadn't yet filled out and become strong and buff and still acne. And plus I'm on this extreme mind and mood altering drug. I'm riddled with fear and insecurity at the same time of being paranoid and delusional. I mean, can you imagine? You probably can.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah. And it was soul crushing. So rather than own up to it and ask for help, I literally, when I was taken aside and asked like, dude, what's going on? This is like the 10th take. And, so, you know, I reacted out of, I went on the offense, you know, I went on the defense rather. I went on the defense and I told everybody to fuck off and I don't need you. And I'm sick of this and I'm fed up with this. And I walked off the set and I was happy about it. I was happy to cost them money. I felt like, you know, it was owed to them, and really downward spiral from there. Went pretty intense.
Did you have any regrets from doing that? Like the next day, did you wake up and say, oh shit, where am I going to get money from? What am I going to do next? Or that was not on your mind?
So at that time, the movie, I had $1 million offer for, the guy who wrote Walk to Remember, with Mandy Moore. It was a book.
Okay.
I had $1 million offer on the table and he wrote that script with me as the main character in mind. And they were like, this is yours. You don't have to audition for it. We wrote the whole deal with you as the lead.
Okay.
So I had, a music career at that time. I had 2 top 10 hits in Europe. So I was thinking in my mind, I was like, screw you mofos. I'm going to go make this $1 million and be a pop star. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to be the handsome beach boy. I want to sing and dance. I want to entertain. I want to, you know, grow my craft and take these meaty roles. However, I was unable to suit up and show up for those either.
Wow.
And I walked away from those.
Wow. So your drug addiction was really getting the best of you and you started to choose that over your career. It sounds like.
There wasn't any choice. We'll put it that way. There wasn't any choice. There was the illusion that I would be able to stop and there would be a choice. At some point I was going to put the plug in the jug, as they say, and put my big boy pants on. But I just couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself to.
I'm curious. You said you were raised by a single mother. What was her thoughts on what was happening to you then?
Oh man. I mean, she hired, bounty hunters. Mm-hmm. She paid off friends to try to at least keep an eye on me. She would try to locate me about once a year. I would go to rehab and I would attempt to, put myself back together and get back on the horse, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I would always fall, you know, as I believe any real addict will without a sufficient substitute.
Right. You know? So I'm wondering if you think that this was partly because you grew up on screen. You know, you were part of Hollywood. You were a child actor. And do you think that had anything to do with it?
You know, life's a mixed bag of nuts, really. You know, I would say it'd be easier to wonder if I didn't get on TV, would I be in prison for murder? Would I have joined a gang? Would I have done a school shooting? I mean, I was in the grips of so much pain, selfishness, self-centeredness, ego and pride. I don't know if it made it better or if it made it worse. You know, one thing's for sure. I made enough money to really go deep and to be able to keep myself out of some really big prison sentences. Had I not had that money, would I be a product of the system? You know, would I be totally institutionalized by now? Maybe. So I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Cause I was on that path far before television. I actually believe that my deep desire for approval and applause and feeling a part of life by doing a good job was one of the manifestations of that addiction before I knew that chemicals could scratch that itch.
Wow. That's really profound, actually.
Thank you.
I mean, you talk about being in prison, you talk about having these addictions. Was there something that was like a rock bottom for you where you really realized, okay, this is the end, I need to stop?
So many rock bottoms. So many huge breakthroughs. Oh my gosh, this has got to end. And totally, you know, left by the wayside. You know, the pain and misery, defeat really in my experience is not enough to hold the line. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. I've gone deeper after thinking I could never go deeper. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that there's deeper, of course, to go. Sadly, the hopeless moments have usually been the biggest standout hopeless moments are when there's handcuffs on me. And I'm looking at, you know, at one time when I was 20 years old, I was looking at 35 years in prison for manufacturing methamphetamine, because from 17 to 20, when I went on my meth binge, you know, I had been, kidnapped, held at gunpoint, robbed, conned, and manipulated, used all, just in 2 years that all my money was gone. And I had to start making this stuff for myself. You know what I mean? It didn't take very long to blow through what was left. Anyway, looking at 35 years in prison at 17, my life's over. I'm 35 pounds underweight. My face is stabbed and picked. I look like Skeletor. That was my nickname. And those cuffs go on, and the cops say, "What's wrong with you, man? These are the Newport Beach police officers. I grew up in Newport Beach. These guys know me. And, what is wrong with you? What are you doing to yourself, kid?" And that was really one of the first times I realized, dude, I thought about it for a second. What is wrong with me? I should be driving a Lamborghini right now, walking off the set of Universal Studios. Like, what is wrong with me? Why would I be here in Yorba Linda, hiding in a house where there's a, you know, this girl lives with her kid and her mom, and doing drugs? This is weird. Now that you mention it, I was like, oh my gosh, to get high, for like a hit, for like the one more day. Like in my mind, it was always just one more day. Like, I'm just going to do this. Just today. It'll be done today, or it'll be different tomorrow. So that was a huge wake up call for me. And at that point, that wake up call was really induced or even allowed to hit, because I thought I was going to prison for 35 years. And what was the point of having hope? What was the point of trying to change now? Because by the time I get out of prison, you know, I'm going to be toothless with the shit beat out of me, and I'll have swastikas on my chest. This is going to be a holy nightmare. Like, if I want to survive in there, you know, this is okay. Well, I guess it's over. I guess that is really over now. Maybe I should take a look at it now that it's too late.
Yeah.
You know, I never want to be at that it's too late place again. I don't want to do that.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life can be hard sometimes. That's one thing we all have in common. Maybe you're thinking of changing careers, or you're struggling in a relationship. You're at a crossroads and could use some guidance. Whatever you're going through, therapy can help you break through and find the best path for your future. I've used therapy in the past for certain things that I've been going through. They don't have to be major things, but sometimes it's great to just talk it out with somebody who you don't have in your immediate life. It makes things look a lot clearer. And finding out about BetterHelp was really interesting. You download the app, you type in some things that are important to you, and you're matched up with a therapist that may work for you. And I have found that my therapist was the perfect match for me. I've been using her once a week since I started, and I'm really excited to continue to use her. BetterHelp is a great place to start if you're thinking about therapy. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient and flexible. All you have to do is fill out the brief questionnaire, like I said, and BetterHelp will match you with a licensed therapist. And if you don't click with that therapist, you can switch at any time for no additional charge. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/understood today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/understood.
Okay. That's like so amazing. You just had me speechless for a second. So you did rehab a number of times, correct?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
So you also did celebrity rehab. Did you consider that, would you consider that a real rehab for you?
Actually, I mean, squeaky wheel kind of gets the grease, you know, and in my opinion, Dr. Drew took a lot of time aside with me and I absorbed a lot from those groups. I mean, he's a legitimate addictionologist. I mean, he really knows how us kind of A-type, you know, overachiever types, especially the prettier ones or the faint. I mean, he has a really good understanding of how we operate, both on a biological level and how the gene interacts with that. I learned a lot from him, things that I still teach other people to this day that have impacted my life 100%. I had been offered celebrity rehab multiple times. I had a manager at the time who's a complete douchebag who kept telling me, hey, it's $100,000. Just drink a beer. You know, I'm like, dude, I've been sober for 7 years. I'm not going to drink a beer just to go make the $100,000,
right?
You know? And then the next year, hey, it's it's more, you know, just whatever. And then I think like season five, when I did it, I had been sober for at least 10 years. I was like, well, I haven't drank or done drugs, but I inject a lot of weird shit. I mean, from B vitamins and glutathione. I mean, this is a million years ago, or not a million, but this is a long time ago when, you know, now lipotropic fat burning injections are super normal. Now growth hormone, you can get on a freaking app, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But at the time, injecting yourself a bunch of times a day with growth hormone and, you know, procaine solution, anti-aging, all this stuff, mm-hmm. TRT, you know, back then it seemed like I was some kind of gorilla weirdo. Now it's pretty socially acceptable. It's kind of more normal. But I told him, hey, I'll make a big deal out of it. I'm pinning myself with all this stuff. It looks crazy. And he's like, I don't think they're going to go for it. And they dropped the number down. But so I went in for steroid, addicted to steroids, which, you know, that is a very slippery slope. You know, there is a cost reward ratio there. There are more so the obsession with self and or the idea that if I get buff enough and ripped enough, then I will be happy. There is the I can't go out to dinners and or be as social because I got to do 2 workouts a day and I'm on this, you know, 0 calorie diet or whatever. There are aspects of that can really cut you off from life.
Yeah.
I did definitely have a good experience with the staff there, Bob Forrest, Shelly Sprague. Shelly, I still talk to Shelly. She's a beautiful human. She told me, you know, that, you know, I suffered from sobriety with a small S, that I didn't have a capital S on my sobriety. There was like a little gray area nootropic that kind of made me feel there was always something I was putting in the mix that was potentially blocking me off from really being part of or knowing that my side of the street was clean. And that stayed with me for a long time.
Right.
So I got gems for sure on that show. I got gems and beautiful gifts from the staff there.
Yeah. So we'll talk about your opinion on reality TV, so to speak, in a little bit, because I want to ask your opinion now that it's like all in the news right now. But I, as we talked about briefly, was on Celebrity Rehab the season before you, and I was asking if you had seen that season or you knew that I was on the season, but I didn't get an answer for you. Tell me.
Oh yeah, yeah. So it's the weirdest thing because I hear your name from like multiple people. Oh, do you know Rachel? Oh, you must know Rachel. You can tell Rachel. And then like people like tell me about you, and it's just so cool that we're finally like on the show and meeting and talking. Because yes, I've heard that you were on that season. No, I don't believe I've seen that season and or a couple episodes. But it's like, you're just one of those people that like knows a lot of people, and yeah, we have like, I think a few friends in common. Yeah, so I'm it's sure. really, it's neat.
But similar to you, I had a great experience. So I, you know, first of all, my father had died of a cocaine overdose. So I felt.
My dad died of a heroin overdose.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. So, I grew up being nervous about how my personality, I might have an addictive personality. I was sort of scared, just like with the fear of throwing up and the fear of drugs. It was very similar. I was just scared of it. You know what I mean? So, so I went into the show when they asked me to do it. I had just become famous because I was in a little scandal at the time. They were like, you should come on Celebrity Rehab. I had just been in, asked to do Celebrity Apprentice by Donald Trump. And I really wanted to do that because I felt like my name was all over the news at this point. It was 2009. And I wanted people to know who I was. And I didn't think the way I was being represented in the press was appropriate or true. And I had really become a recluse from all that. It really affected me. And I eventually decided to do Celebrity Rehab, even though I didn't feel like I had an addiction, so to speak, because I had a connection with Dr. Drew. He sat down with me for 30 minutes and I was like, this guy gets me. I need what he can offer and no one else gets me like this. And I still have that relationship with him. Like, I feel like he just,
please tell him I said hi.
I will.
I have a big question for him. He explained to me the addiction gene, the warrior gene and science and the mice and the, how it's genetically passed down and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And he told me the name of the book and I can't remember what it is. And I've been emailing his manager or whatever, but I don't have the right contact and I want to know what the name of that book is. So please send him my love.
I will ask him. I will get that answer for you. And I even have his cell phone number.
Sorry to cut you off.
No, I will give you his cell phone number after the show. I'm sure he'd love to hear from
you.
Yeah. But my experience was so good. I was on there for love addiction, which I thought was a complete joke when I went in. I was like, this is so dumb. People are dying. Leif Garrett was on my show. He was completely coming out of a heroin stint or whatever you call it. And was going through a lot of withdrawal for the first 5 days or so, couldn't come out of his room. And I'm like, how do I tell people I'm here for love addiction? This is just embarrassing. But as time went on, I realized it's a real thing and how it's affected me. And then over the course of years, I really saw that a lot of people that suffer from addiction, one of the addictions that it all starts with is your relationships, right? And love addiction is a 100%. Huge part of that. It acts, some people act out with sex addiction, which is different than love addiction, but I really saw how love addiction had affected my life. And the point of this whole story was that, people talk about reality TV being so produced and so fake. That was not my experience. I had an amazing experience. I learned a lot. I loved the group of eight that I was with, or seven and me. Unfortunately, two of those people are dead now from addiction.
Was it Michael Starr? Was he one of them?
No, he was, I think, before me. It was Jason Davis.
Okay.
And Frankie Long.
Jason Davis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jason Davis. Yep. I knew him. Yep. Yeah.
So who was on your show?
We had Dwight Gooden.
Oh, I love him.
Pitcher. Yeah. We had the Long Island Lolita.
Oh, Amy Fisher.
Amy Fisher.
How was that?
It was very strange. her husband threatened to kill me, to bury me live on camera. I made a joke. We were all at a dinner table. It was actually my sister. It was me. And I brought up, because I don't, have you seen the Addams Family?
Yeah.
The original Addams Family, Wednesday pulls out of a pack of serial killer playing cards. Okay. And she's like, I'll trade you an Amy Fisher for a, you know, whatever. And I thought that was cool, yeah. You know, and I brought it up at the dinner table and they were so frigging mad. And it was like such a sore subject. Like, I'll trade you a Jeffrey Dahmer for your Amy Fisher.
Right.
And I'm like, that's freaking cool. But it's years. Like, you haven't moved past that, right. You know, like right. What, obviously they hadn't. And her husband wanted to kill me and he threatened to bury me. And right. There was almost a big fight. Meanwhile, I'm 200 pounds and I'm a 14-time Brazilian jiu-jitsu champion. I would have crushed him.
Right. So I take it you don't still speak to her.
No, definitely not. It was Michael Lohan,
yeah. Who,
as you know, is quite the whirlwind himself.
Yeah.
And Steven Adler from Guns N' Roses.
Yeah. He was my next door neighbor in Vegas for many years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's a great guy.
He's a precious little thing for sure.
Yeah.
And that actress from Blue Lagoon, she has a guy's name.
You mean Brooke Shields? No.
No, maybe not Blue Lagoon. It's another movie with the same guy. I forget her name.
Okay, well, whatever.
But I think she passed away recently.
Oh, from drug addiction?
She was definitely an alcoholic for many years. I don't know if she died sober or complications due to alcohol.
Oh, wow.
Ryan something? No, I don't know. I forget her name.
Okay, well, that's anyway. Okay. And then you also did some other reality type shows. You did Celebrity Big Brother, correct?
Oh, my God. That was the worst thing ever.
Why?
Dude.
Well, I know you got into a little trouble there at the end, but before that, did you not appreciate being on the show? Was it just a nightmare?
I was so excited to be on that show. I was so looking forward to it. I had made my own custom clothing line. I had a lot of big plans and the staff was really cool. The hotel was beautiful. The payday was fantastic. I really needed that escape in my life at that time. It was like my big Hail Mary. It really put me back on track. I had a lot invested into that production. Mm. And, you know, the God's honest truth, dude, I got completely hoodwinked, man. Completely hoodwinked and screwed. Viacom oh man, gnarly. I was all alone out there in the sea. No you know, no manager, no agent, no freaking lawyers. And man, I got the book thrown at me. It was gnarly. It was such a bummer.
And did you feel like the, you know, what you did was as bad as they made it seem?
I know for a fact it wasn't.
Really?
Yeah. So the girl, I forget her name, the girl and I who got into the issue mm-hmm. in question, we had the same manager.
Okay.
And her and I had dinner together and she came to play pool with me at my hotel before the show started.
Okay.
And her and I were not supposed to know who's on the show. Nobody's supposed to know who's on the show. It's supposed to be all super secret. But the manager from out there who managed her also said, I want you guys to do some stuff. You know, let's team up, you know, let's create some
an
love,
alliance.
You know? Yeah. And some romance. Let's, you know, let's steam it up. And, you know, first and foremost, had I not have been drunk, had I not have been stoned, had I not have been on Valium, you know, this would not have happened.
Right.
So I take accountability for that. I made the mistake of being out of sorts, drunk, and, you know, every time in my life, historically, empirically proven, every time I'm buzzed or drunk and stoned, bad things happen to me, you know, period, you know, and I, the insanity of this thing is I tell myself this time it'll be different. I'll manage it. I'll control it. Anyway, you know, we're on there and, I think it was the first day,
you know,
the first or the second or the third day. Right. And, you know, she had a bathing suit line that she wanted to promote. She was launching a bathing suit line and she was launching it on this show. It was her big come out for her new bathing suit line. Now, mind you, all of her bathing suits were prototypes. It wasn't in production yet.
Yeah.
They're prototypes. And she had, we were in the jacuzzi together and she had a bathing suit malfunction where her bottoms completely popped off.
Okay.
And, Jeremy, will you tie me, please? My bottoms have seemed to have fallen off. Mm. So I'm like, you know, where cameras are all around. I'm like, oh, all right. I see where you're going with this. You want to talk about your bathing suits, right?
Yeah.
And sure, I'll do that. And, you know, so then we're hanging out and, you know, so she comes out in a new bathing suit. Oh, that one malfunctioned. She's got to change it. It's a new bathing suit. And in the first 48 hours, she had 4 bathing suits on, you know, because she wants to showcase her bathing suit. So I'm just reading the room here, right? Mind you, I got my own plans. I want to do stuff too. And anyway, when the drinks come out at the end of the day, it's a tray with a red wine, a vodka tonic, a rum and coke, and like, I don't know, Jack and Diet. Let's just say that. I don't really know what it was. But me being Mr., you know, considerate, you guys go ahead. Now, mind you, I'm craving a drink bad, right? But I let everybody go first, and I get the last drink. I don't remember what it was. It might have been the rum and coke. And, you know, they don't want you to get drunk on the show, supposedly, is what they say. You know, and 30 minutes later, another tray comes out. You know, oh, no, yeah, I'll just, you know, don't get what you like. Everybody's got preferences. I really have no preference as long as I'll just take whatever. I get like a red wine. You know, 30 minutes later, another tray comes out. I get like the Jack, whatever. I had 3 different types of alcohol with 3 different types of mixers. Mm-hmm. And I'm on a Valium and I ate weed butter. So all of a sudden I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm like, oh no, I don't feel good. You know that feeling, right? Yeah. Well, you don't.
I don't. I was just going to say, but I know what you're talking about. I have plenty of friends who have been there.
I do not like to puke either, but there's that spot where you're fine. You can speak fine. You know everything that's going on, but you're getting nauseous.
Yeah.
And I think it had to do with, of course, you know, being an empty stomach and being on Valium too. Valium really enhances the effect of the alcohol. So I don't say anything to anybody and I go get a liter of water. I'm like, I'm going to go puke a few times, drink the water, maybe puke again, rehydrate. No harm, no foul. Mm. You know, nobody will be the wiser. Yeah. I just need to get this 3 different types of sugar and 3 different types of booze out of my stomach. That was a terrible idea, right? So there's no locks on the bathroom. There's no cameras in the bathroom. And in our contracts, it's really, really clearly stated that no 2 members are allowed to be in the bathroom at the same time because there's no cameras. One person is allowed in the bathroom. Period.
Okay.
Clear cut rule. So I go in the bathroom and I close the door and I put the back of my foot against the door because there's no lock on it. I get on all fours and I puke. Thank God. Thank God. I was spinning, but it's going to be over now because I'm puking. Mm. Drink a bunch of water, puke again. Okay. Probably got puke hanging in my beard. I'm sitting there like that little cold sweat. Whew. I'm glad that's over. I hate puking, but at least I won't be spinning now. And they start pounding on the door. Jeremy, are you okay? Are you okay? Let us in. Let us in. I'm fine. I'm fine. If you watch the, this is not my first rodeo, guys. I'm fine. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Yeah. I'm fine. Please, no. And they literally force their way into the bathroom. 4 people. I'm sitting there sweating. Uncomfortable. I don't want to be seen like this. I don't want to be tended to. I just want to compose myself. Everybody leaves. She stays, closes the door, gets down on the floor with me, patting my head. Okay. No, I'm fine. Really, I'm fine. She has a robe on. And I'm sitting there I probably wanted to change the subject or something. I don't know, you know? And I grab, here's her robes like this. And I grab her robe and I go, what bathing suit are you wearing this time? Right? It was a joke. Like, I thought for sure she had a bathing suit on.
Right.
Because she had been in bathing suits all the time. How, why would she be walking around naked in a robe and busting in the bathroom? Right? Yeah. So which one is it this time? Her and I's little inside joke mm-hmm. that we had been doing all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Covering up another bathing suit with a robe so you can do another big reveal.
Right. Lo and behold, she had no bathing suit on this time.
Lo and behold, no bathing suit. I see the top of her bosom, not even the nipple. Mind you, she is a topless model. That is her job. Mm. That is her job, to show her breasts in the magazines.
Yeah.
She walks out and I don't know how or why is acting sniffly. And Perez Hilton comes out and makes this huge deal out of it.
Right.
So I come out and I'm not defensive because I wasn't trying to be sexual. I wasn't trying to be aggressive. I didn't have an idea in my mind like, hey, pukey face Jeremy wants to kiss you right now. And this is a move. No, this is like, we're buddies and we're working together. We're partners in this, right? And I'm making a joke with my partner. Oh, what's this ploy about? What's this bathing suit ploy about?
Right.
So I tell the truth. Yeah. I tugged on her. I pulled her rope to the side to see what bathing suit she was. Of course, nobody gets that. It probably sounds like a lie. And a viewer at home who only hears the conversation, no cameras, nobody saw anything, mm-hmm. calls and says, I witnessed a sexual assault on television. Wow. A lie.
Wow. Okay.
Now, because the police are involved, the police must come to the house. They must. They have to investigate.
And they're filming all this? And, I mean, this is all on TV.
And they're filming all this.
Wow.
Now, of course, I'm not going to lie because I don't believe I have anything to cover up. Yes, I was on the bathroom floor. They burst their way in there. We have this running joke. I wanted to see what bathing suit she was wearing. And I moved the lapel of her robe to the side while she was on all fours in my face, patting me with a tissue.
Right.
Oh, lovey. Oh, you're feeling okay? Which bathing suit is it this time? Oh, it's not a bathing suit, you know? So
you get arrested. That's what you got arrested for?
Yeah. Fucking got arrested for sexual assault, kicked off the show, and docked all my money.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that part. Wait. Okay. Which brings me to a perfect question for you, though. Like, this is, imagine, I'm actually shocked this happened back then because that was quite a long time ago. You see this reality reckoning now. I don't feel like you saw that kind of thing back then. Don't you think that was rare for someone to take such a stance back then?
I mean, maybe this was the start of it, but every reality show I've ever watched is people freaking smacking each other on the butt, getting wasted, making out, and being absolute trash.
Right. So what are your...
Getting in fist fights. I mean, you see people getting in actual fist fights and not going to jail.
Right, of course. That's,
right?
Right. So what are your thoughts? That's crazy. So what are your thoughts on this, this movement that Bethany has made to get reality TV stars unionized and maybe some back pay for all the things they've had to go through? Are you on Team Bravo or Team Bethany?
I do not watch television. I have no idea what's going on. Oh. I don't even know who Bethany is.
Oh, Bethany Frankel?
No clue.
Wow. That's a soundbite in and of itself. That's pretty interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, so
I'm probably saving myself from a lot of bullshit.
Yeah. No, of course. So, but you have no interest in being an actor anymore, it seems, correct?
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Okay. And do you feel...
I had it all, right? I'm not going to clamor to get what was already mine back. It's like, take it. You know? Right. I made my bed and I'm going to lie in it and I'm definitely making the best of it.
Well, you
I mean, I'm in Kauai.
I know. I was going to say you really are though, because I feel like the life experience that you've had so far has been very full with many ups and downs, but now what you're doing, you couldn't be doing it without having gone through what you went through. And so you're in a place right now where you're helping people who are at their, sometimes their worst, their rock bottom. You've been there and they probably couldn't get further without you at this moment sometimes. So I think that's pretty powerful and probably more fulfilling sometimes than being applauded and loved on a TV show where people don't even really know who the real you is, I would assume.
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head. I couldn't say it any better.
Good. So tell people what you're doing now, just so in case they want to find you, reach out to you, look for you, where can they find you?
Please find me. Please reach out. I'm on Instagram. I think I'm going to start a TikTok soon. People are telling me I need to, cause I'm a ham and silly and whatever. But it's, at Jeremy Jackson Fitness. I have a new website launching, Jeremy Jackson Fitness. We will be doing, you know, retreats, meditations. You know, I've been, diving deep into quantum mentality, mindset, spiritual development, breathwork, meditation, really trying to, you know, of course, enhance my awareness and my consciousness of how absolutely wonderful and beautiful life is, and work to eliminate any of the pieces of me that are keeping me from that oneness and from an attitude of gratitude on a daily basis, because that's all they really are. They're perceptions and preconceived ideas that I have that I made along the way. And if they're not working to excel my life and the lives of others, then why do I have them around? And those things need to be looked at under a microscope. You know, I got to really get the mirror out and just continue to discover and discard anything that's keeping me off from being absolutely happy, joyous, and free. And that's every single person's divine birthright, man. And the only thing cutting us off from that is us, and what we think we know. So the quest, you know, whether you're finding me on Jeremy Jackson Fitness or at Jeremy Jackson on Instagram or, you know, on Facebook or whatever it is, you know, I'm looking to build an army, man. I'm looking to build an army and raise the collective consciousness through love and acceptance and continual growth, because, you know, the work unfortunately never ends.
Yeah.
It's always continuous, and there are going to be struggles, right? But there's always room to grow. And that's it. Once you accept a couple of those non-negotiables and really start linking up, joining together, creating more interdependence. So many people out there have strong suits that we need. And so many people out there have weaknesses that we've overcome. And it's really in that universal energy flow, that loop of giving and receiving, sharing altruistically what you have, and allowing other people to gift you with wisdom through their own experience, that you can really start to rise on this tide of spirituality and of mindset and awareness. Wow. Because we only know what we know, and we'll only get what we get if we continue to believe in what we believe in and make efforts exteriorly based off our interior knowledge. And as you raise the interior frequency and experience and expansion of that, all of a sudden the outside starts changing and you're like, holy shit, this is a new experience. This is different. This is better than it used to be. And then that just sends you on this mystery journey of, wow, what else is waiting? What else is more that I've been limiting? And then like, that's freaking God, dude. Like, what the heck? This is really fun. And it's just purpose driven. And I love to live this life.
Wow. So I just want to say you're very inspirational. I see you. I appreciate you. I think you're amazing.
You spot it because you got it, girl.
maybe one day you will come with me. You can breathe. Maybe I'll be doing ayahuasca.
Where are you?
I'm in Palm Beach.
Where are you?
Palm Beach.
Oh, Palm Beach. Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
My mom lives in Florida, so maybe I'll come out and visit you there.
I would love that. I would love that. I can't wait to meet you in person. I feel like we are friends now, and it is my honor to be your friend. So,
thank you. Hugging.
And I wish you the best. Thank you so much for doing the show. I'm sure everyone will be truly inspired by what you had to say.
My pleasure. Love you.
Love you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.